Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Co-operative Bank half-year results. I'm joined this afternoon by Chris Davis, our Chief Operating Officer, who's going to run through some of our transformation activity, and Nick Slape, who will run through the numbers. In terms of the slides, I'll just quickly run through sort of progress year-to-date. So if we could turn to slide four. The first thing to say is that we feel like we've had made positive strategic progress in the first half, and financial performance has been delivered ahead of expectations, and that has been despite a challenging UK retail banking market. And really that has been driven by continued focus in income growth. Core income grew by 1% in the half year, and we were able to focus on continuing to drive BAU cost reductions, whilst crucially in the half year investing in our brand, digital capability, and indeed broadening our product offerings for our customers. In terms of overall spend, we have around the spend we need to do to fix the basics that Chris will talk about, and Nick will run through the financials. We expect to reduce the amount of spend required this year and next year around our transformation. And positively, our cost-income ratio has tracked ahead of our own internal planning assumptions, and we also expect to reduce our cost-income guidance for the year. Another important development in Q2 was the successful issuance of our Tier 2 bond for £200 million. We also got positive news from Moody's, who have upgraded us in the quarter. The features of the bank that continue to be strong are we continue to have a high-quality, low-risk loan book with an average loan LTV and a mortgage book of 57%. And our capital base is at 21.9%, again, ahead of our expectations. So in terms of overall financial outputs, whilst we have seen some NIM compression that Nick will talk about, overall we feel confident on cost income and therefore underlying profit delivery both for this year and next year. Crucially, capital, we're upgrading our guidance from 19% to 20.5% this year, and also upgrading guidance through the plan by 1% each year. And that's been driven by strong capital discipline and focus in the year. If I turn to page five, the link to the strategy that we presented to you at the start of the year, the strategy is very much around how we trust the brand of 3.5 million customers we have, the leading ethical brand in the UK, where we trust ourselves to invest in that brand to both re-engage our existing customers and then also continue to provide them with better products and services. And in the first half, I'll run you through some of the specifics that we've been able to develop through that. If I turn to page six, just to recap on the plan. The plan and transformation plan for the Co-operative Bank that we put in place with strong support from our shareholders and the board really talks about three phases of the plan. The first phase being fixing the basics, which is really fixing some of the things in the bank that enable it to start to grow and deliver, and then crucially in the horizon, really creating sustainable advantage for the bank in 2022. So in terms of the fixing the basics phase, as I alluded to, good news that we've delivered the financial performance robustly in the first half, the Tier 2 issuance. Lots of work with our people to improve the performance frameworks and the way the teams work. Some upskilling of our IT colleagues, our change capability and supplier management, and again, Chris will talk to that when we talk through the transformation. And crucially, as I said, re-engaging with our loyal customers. In terms of enablement, starting to get more digitally engaged, and again, Chris will talk to that. And then in terms of some of the big strategic projects around fixing the basics, we continue to make good progress in our desktop transformation, which nears completion, and indeed our separation work, which again is very well progressed. And we start in the replatforming of our mortgage and savings platforms. And that really does provide a platform from which we can look to next year, 2020 and 2021, where not only can we start to grow our customer base and our segments going forward, but also an opportunity to start to drive deeper cost savings, be that through supplier rationalization, simplifying our organization, which will drive further costs, and then start the process of investing some of the funding that we've enjoyed from BCR for our SME business. Everything is about how we digitize and simplify the bank, and again, Chris will talk to that in a second. If I turn to page seven, continue to get recognition for the brand and the customer base. Firstly, very proud of the fact that we've been voted the most trusted mainstream bank in the UK over the last few weeks. Really represents effectively the cooperative bank at its best, very well respected and trusted by its existing customers. Also good recognition around, be it our package bank accounts and our current account offerings. On the service side, MoneyFacts made us branch network of the year. So again, the customer ethos and customer service in the bank is something that continues to distinguish us and provide strong differentiation. If I turn to page eight, and this is where the cooperative bank is different. Just to bring it to life, our ethical policy and the way we work is fundamental to and critical to our customers and the way that we work internally as colleagues. And to give you a sense, our ethical policy was originally defined in 1992, and we remain the market leader for non-customer ethical perception in the UK. And that is really the bedrock that was created around the ethical principles under which the bank works. And if I just bring that to life with some of the activities that we drive with our customers and our colleagues, we actively support cooperative businesses across the UK through an initiative called Hive. Between our customers and our colleagues, we've contributed £1.1 million to homelessness since May 2017. And we've also tackled some tough issues around economic abuse. And these are the sort of things that are important to our customers, they're important to our colleagues. And with that, you also see our commitment to environmental sustainability. And just to bring this to life, our first environmental targets that were set in the bank were set in 1998. From 17 to 18, we reduced our carbon emissions by some 39%, and we're on track to zero waste to landfill by the end of 2020. These aren't CSR items. These are effectively a way of life and a way of living in our organization. The benefit from that is that in the UK, 49% of UK customers resonate with the propositions that we have, and therefore provides us with very ripe and fertile ground to be able to grow our franchise. How does that manifest itself? If I take our current account offering as an example, through Everyday Rewards, rather than taking a cash reward from the bank, our customers choose to make donations. We made some £150,000 of donations, our customers did in H1, and they'll make donations to the likes of Amnesty International, Refuge. As I say, this represents what the bank is, and it's certainly very heartening to see that being lived in all levels in the bank, and as I say, does provide in a changing world a point of real differentiation. In terms of finding growth in a competitive market on page nine, as you would all be aware, the market has been intense and competitive in the first half in retail lending, and where our focus has been is very much on where we can find targeted growth to get the franchise growing. We managed to get £1.1 billion of mortgage growth from H1 18, and the focus has been very much on how we continue to build our service propositions, how we drive better retention, improved online switching for our mortgage customers, and also broadening our buy-to-let proposition. So we've been able to find opportunities for targeted growth. In the retail deposit space, we've not been active in the switcher market, primarily because our focus is on attracting customers who are drawn to our brand rather than getting into a price-led switching activity. But the good news is we've continued to see good momentum in terms of high-quality, loyal customers who are enhancing their trust in the bank, but crucially, also customers that are drawn to our proposition. In the first half, we made good progress with our Select Access Saver product, and we generated £220 million of new bank balance as a result of that initiative. The SME business, again, whilst there's been competition in the market, we've actually seen good progress and growth in that franchise. And it's always worth bearing in mind that we are the seventh largest SME bank in the UK, and we did enjoy £50 million of funding from BCR for supporting future growth of our SME franchise. In more detail on page 10, you get a little bit of what we're going to be doing. around that. And I think the crucial statistic I would leave you with is we have seen customer growth in Q2 in our SME business. That's the first time since 2013. And Donald Kerr, who I bought in ex-CYBG and Lloyds Banking Group, is leading that business for me. And we're starting to see some good early momentum as we start to invest in the business. What we anticipate with the BCR funding and some of our own funding is really starting to build on our business current account offering, which will include things like same-day account opening, business credit cards, digital applications, and online enhancements for our customers. And as I say, that those services will not only enhance the services for our existing 85,000 customers, but give us an opportunity to be able to grow that business more broadly. So we're very excited as a team on the opportunities presented by SME, our SME business. If I turn to page 11, just to give you a little bit of a sense of our credit card business, this is an area, a business that that effectively we have had been active in for a number of years, but has been sort of underinvested and a little underloved. And what we've been focused on is how to really reactivate that business. And I think, again, we start from very firm foundations. We are ranked third by Fairer Finance in terms of our proposition for credit cards, and first overall for transparency. In a world where these are important attributes, it gives us a good platform. And as we get the channels, particularly our branch channels, working and our digital channels, by way of example, we have seen a 300% uplift in sales from our branches. So some good early signs in terms of progress. The last area that I'd want to pick up before I pass to Nick is our brand and effectively what's happening with our loyal customers. We have this half year launched a nationwide advertising campaign around for people with purpose, and this really reaches out to customers where our ethical heritage and roots resonate, and that campaign has reached 21 million TV customers and 9 million customers on catch-up TV, and is starting to get the brand active and activated externally. The positive is that seeing our current account NPS return to plus 23, which now puts us back at third in the market, and we'd expect to make continued progress in all our propositions. Specifically to that end, for example, our SME business, from a branding point of view, we're also going out over the next couple of weeks on effectively a 30-month free banking offering for our customers in SME, and that again gives us good opportunity to attract new customers but also attract new high-quality deposits. So with that, I'd like to pass to Chris to just run through the work that he's doing around our transformation blueprint. Chris came as our Chief Operating Officer and effectively is providing support to me and our team as we seek to drive the transformation of our business. So, Chris, over to you.
Thank you, Andrew, and it's good to be here. I joined the bank a few months ago, and I've had sort of 30 years in the banking industry, working as a COO in RBS Corporate and then Ulster Bank. More recently, I was Vice President of the banking practice in IBM across UK and Ireland, and I've come on board, as Andrew says, to take on the role of COO and help Andrew and the team deliver and drive efficiency. So really what I want to talk about as we look at creating the ethical digital bank is, for me, it's all around making this complex simple and the simple compelling. And that drives efficiency, resilience, and delivery excellence. And those are the things I think we need to hang our hats on as we move forward. If you look at the next slide around the context, I think it builds on the plan that Andrew and the team have already put in place around fixing the basics, enabling the future, and establishing a sustainable advantage. But if you look at where we are today, we have about 500 business applications, 3 mortgage platforms, 2 saving platforms, 12 data centers, and if you include all of our suppliers, not just the IT ones, over 600 suppliers. That drives complexity, it drives cost, it makes it harder to provide a resilient service, it makes the speed of change more challenging, and it degrades our ability to provide the excellent customer service we wish. So So the whole concept and strategy is around simplifying that. If I move on to look at what we have already achieved, I think what is comforting is we've actually started to make real progress. And actually, in terms of the fixing the basic elements, most of the heavy lifting has already been done. On page 15, you can see that from a separation perspective, we are already over 75% complete. We plan to have the final separation event later this year, and that will exit from our co-op data centres, which will start to tackle that number you saw on the first page. Importantly, all of the key customer migrations were completed in 2017, and what remains is the likes of reporting, networks, email, head office applications. These are important, and we'll continue to have a robust and rigorous approach to completing that program, but the risk profile is substantially different to a big customer migration. When you look at desktop, actually, we're now 60% of the way through. Every week, we're ratcheting more colleagues deployed. We've got all but one branch deployed. We need to dig up a road to get the final one sorted, so that will take a little time. And in terms of that program, I expect to be over 95% complete this quarter. In terms of some of the other elements around mobile, we're replatforming rapidly. We've got a much better, simpler, more modern online mobile platform. We've migrated already 350,000 customers to that. And again, this is a huge step in terms of that simplification journey. We've closed out our legacy monetized platforms. We've done 6 releases in the first half of the year, and we'll start using a more DevOps agile delivery platform where we can get a higher volume of customer releases in the future. In terms of further successful deliveries and simplification, we've decommissioned our Diebold platforms and moved 3 million cardholders onto the First Data platform. This also starts to talk to that supplier consolidation where we had too many suppliers, which meant we were scattered in terms of our ability to manage them. We're now focusing on fewer partners where we create strategic alliances and manage for value. We've also kept up with the key regulatory changes that we need, implementing check imaging and SWIFT compliance. Alongside all of this, as we move into the new digital world, clearly we absolutely prioritize cybersecurity, and we're working to industry standards. Some of this work has been significantly helped by the digital moves and the desktop transformation, where we're now not having a legacy technology hold us back, and we can implement much higher security and better security software. So if you look to enabling the future, we've got 6 key tranches to doing this. We can't wait to complete all the simplification in terms of our customer deliverables. Hence, we're using our digital solutioning to drive that customer functionality. And here we'll connect to the legacy world through APIs, but we'll increasingly plug that into more modern, simple banking infrastructure. And that way we'll be able to deliver new functionality, but also drive the cost efficiencies out by keeping the model simple. A good example of one of the recent deliveries was on your mobile app, you now have a little button which comes up saying, do you want to be paperless? I think most of us probably do. Rather than having to apply or phone anyone up, you press a button, and it's done. No more paper statements, everything electronic. If you wish to change that, you just go into settings and press a button. And that's what I mean about compelling and simple propositions. That also, of course, plays into our ethical story that Andrew highlighted at the beginning, along with our data center consolidation, where we're using our technology and buildings much more effectively. Talking about probably the obvious element for me of the whole plan of driving efficiency through simplification. 3 mortgage platforms will go down to 1, 2 saving platforms down to 1. That will help, as I've already said, getting rid of some of those data centers this year, and also further data centers will exit what's known as some of our RED or Legacy Britannia technology. We'll also focus significantly on our payments infrastructure. Over the time that we've grown up as a bank, we've inherited different payments channels from different parts of the organization, and it's left us with a legacy of duplicated payment systems. So we're going to simplify those down, driving efficiency, but also driving resilience and driving consistency in the way we deliver to our customers. All of that plays into the risk plank. And I think here, by reducing that legacy reliance, removing the technical debt, we're able to significantly improve our risk position. To do this, we've made a significant investment in our capability. And we've been able to do this by bringing in-house a lot of roles which previously have been outsourced to expensive contract market. This has actually started to show a better outcome in terms of our delivery success rate, but also reduce the costs to deliver. And we've had a campaign, which you may have seen on LinkedIn and social media, to drive 100 roles. We're very pleased that we're already ahead of our target and over 50% of the way through that. Since I've joined, I've also made a decision to insource the AD&M capability from our supplier. That'll, again, strengthen our bench strength, give us control of our execution capability. And we are looking to consolidate those suppliers. I've given you a few examples already. I think the ADM is another example of exiting a relationship which wasn't driving value, and we will make some announcements about some big partnerships in the near future where we will look to drive value, consolidating many relationships to a few where we can work to make the complex simple and the simple compelling, driving efficiency, resilience, and certainty of delivery. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I mean, what I hope you get a sense there is the execution focus we have on delivering on the strategic investment we need to make in both fixing the basics and preparing the bank for its future. And certainly Chris and the team are well on track. And that's the reason some of the highlight, what he's highlighted is, as we've done more work, we can deliver that change at lower cost, and hence the reduction in guidance around what we do on transformation spend. With that, let me pass Nick to run through the numbers. Nick?
Thank you, Andrew. As I take you through the financials, to save repeating myself, the income statement is always compared to H1 2018 and the balance sheet to full year 2018, unless otherwise stated. So starting with the summary on page 18, I am pleased to report that our financial performance is ahead of expectations, with a strong CET1 ratio of 21.9%, representing a 40 basis point reduction. As I turn the pages, I'll refer to guidance as appropriate, and I will cover CET1 on page 27. We are reporting an underlying loss of 2.8 million versus 11.2 million profit, and a loss before tax of 38.5 million, an improvement of 3%. We have provided some business segmentation for the first time here and in the interim financial review, and you can see that income is broadly flat at 191.2 million, with core income up 1% at 189.4 million, as legacy of 1.8 million reduces by 4.2. Retail is down 6.3 million due to sustained mortgage margin pressure and SVR reduction, this margin pressure being one of the main drivers of NIM contraction to 183 basis points. SME is flat and Treasury is up 8.9 million as asset sales and revaluations. In summary, a good income performance in a challenging environment and ahead of expectations. Operating expenditure is up 5% at 193.2 million as efficiencies are offset by our planned brand investment and the reintroduction of variable pay across all levels. Our cost income ratio of 101%, whilst 5.3 percentage points higher than prior year, is tracking ahead of our 115% guidance. We continue to run a high-quality loan book with a net cost of risk less than one basis point. And I will explain the below-the-line items of 35.7 million later on page 25. The next three slides cover income in more detail. Firstly, net interest income and NIM on page 19. The net interest income is down 12.6 million or 7% as expected due to NIM contraction. Legacy continues to run off and now only represents 1% of net interest income, down from 3%. This leaves core interest income down 9.9 million, driven by retail and treasury, with SME flat at around 20 million, as higher balances are partially offset by higher deposit costs. Retail is down 4% to 133.1 million, as asset mix and rate plus SVR attrition are only partially offset by deposit mix and rate. Treasury is down 41% to 6.5 million due to interest expense on Tier 2 debt issued in April, lower mortgage-backed security balances following sales in 2018, and some related hedging adjustments. The latter have a nil impact on income overall, but reduce net interest income and increase other operating income. In terms of NIM, you can see on the bottom chart that overall this is reduced by 25 basis points to 183 basis points, and 185 basis points allowing for this Treasury reclass. As you might expect, given the market backdrop, NIM guidance is challenging. But taking all this into account, along with a lower for longer outlook, I now expect full year 2019 NIM to be around 170 basis points, where previously guided to 175 to 180. Building on this on page 20, with more detail on our mortgage and customer deposit flows, we have seen 2% growth in our mortgage book, a net increase of 365 million to 15.9 billion. New business completion and improved retention were 2.7 billion combined, with increased retention across direct up 11% to 74% and platform up 6% to 56%, partly driven by the introduction of online switching functionality. Our new business margins have been slightly better than prior year, partly, particularly quarter two, where we've seen a reduction in swap rates. Other outflows include SVR attrition of 120 million, and SVR now represents 7% of our book. Core customer deposits on the right-hand graph have increased by 0.6%, a net increase of 105 million. It is pleasing to see our lower cost franchise and SME deposits growing by a combined 1%, 137 million and 50 million respectively. This has been partly driven by incentivized switching and the launch of a new Select Access Saver product. At the same time, we have reduced our more rate-sensitive term deposits by 2%, or 82 million. The chart bottom left, whilst not NIM per the previous page, represents the trend in our gross customer rates. Blended customer lending rates are 5 basis points lower since year-end and 10 basis points since H1 18. Whilst the blended cost of deposits has increased 5 basis points and 6 basis points respectively, 61 basis points is still 14 lower than the base rate, highlighting the value of our franchise. Given these trends, we are revising down our customer asset and liability growth for 2019. Turning to other operating income, where the growth of 57% to 29.9 million has been driven by Treasury. Core customer fee income has reduced by 6% to 15.5 million. The bottom chart breaks this down where you can see retail is the main driver, with continuing trends of customers opting for our everyday rewards proposition, an increase of 5% to 115,000 customers, as well as a reduction in package bank accounts, a 5% reduction to 125,000 accounts. Having said that, we have seen an overall improvement in PCA fee income from improved supplier arrangements. SME has increased 3% to 8.1 million following repricing and small balance increases. This represents 52% of our total core customer fee income. As I said, Treasury is the main driver with a 13.4 million increase to 14.5 million, and there are three reasons for this. One, gilt and mortgage-backed security asset sales account for 4.4 million. Secondly, increased valuation of our Visa Class B preference shares of 3.6 million, taking our book value to 34 million. And thirdly, the hedging adjustments previously mentioned being a contra to net interest income of 3 million. In summary, I believe this is a resilient core income performance of plus 1% in a challenging market. Turning now to operating expenditure on slide 22. Whilst this has increased in total by 5%, or 8 million, our underlying operating expenditure has increased by 2%, following some non-recurring items in 2018, including an FSCS provision release and some gains from property sales. Staff costs have reduced by approximately 2 million, if you look at the bottom chart, on a net basis, with 6 million savings relating to FTE, which is down 5%, offset by the reintroduction of variable pay. Non-staff costs have increased to 122.5 million in the bottom chart. This is a 7% increase after allowing for the non-recurring benefits in 2018 I mentioned. This has been driven by the brand investment that we talked about previously of 4 million and 4 million of cost to generate future benefits, including our capability and innovation bid and third-party supply reductions. Continuous improvement expenditure is 13% lower at 8.2 million as we deliver BAU change in a more cost-efficient manner. I now expect our cost-income ratio to be less than 110% for the full year, previously guided at 115%. The next two slides focus on credit quality. We have a high-quality book with low levels of non-performing loans. This is represented by our very low net cost of risk of less than 1 basis point, which, even after adjusting for a $3.4 million credit relating to exits of certain SME connections, results in an underlying cost of risk of only 5 basis points. I have tried to simplify the coverage story for you by splitting out the POCI balances, which technically sit in Stage 2 and Stage 3 on an IFRS 9 basis, but the majority of which, $291 million, are performing. Non-performing loans, therefore, are $144 million, down from $188 million, and represent only 0.7% of total exposure. Against this, we hold $19.9 million provision, which equates to 14% coverage, down from 18.5% due to the SME connections mentioned, which, whilst more highly covered, resulted in a net credit to income of $3.4 million. In terms of coverage by segment, you will see that unsecured, primarily cards, and SME are highly covered. Secured and legacy, primarily Optimum, are generally well seasoned with low LTV. Finally, bottom left, of 95% of our book is Stage 1, with Stage 2 and 3 concentrations reducing, and our total credit provision stands at $39.1 million. Turning to our unsecured book on page 24, our mortgage book is characterised by a low LTV of 57.2%, which has been fairly constant over the past three quarters. If you look at the top right chart, you can see only a marginal increase in the above 80% LTV band to 14%. Our average completion LTV at 71.5% has again been fairly stable over time. I would draw your attention to the geographical split, where you can see a reduced exposure to London and South East, and finally the split by repayment type, where our interest-only exposure has reduced from 20% to 17%. In summary, solid credit quality as we face geopolitically driven market uncertainty. I will now take you through the below-the-line items on page 25. The difference between our underlying loss of $2.8 million and our loss before tax of $38.5 million is $35.7 million. This is largely driven by strategic project costs of $52.7 million, offset by non-operating income of $19.5 million. I will explain the strategic project costs in more detail on the next page. Non-operating income has increased by $13.8 million, driven by three things. One, increased value of our surrendered loss debt of $7.8 million, taking our book value to $41 million, with a gross value of $132. Two, a deferred consideration related to the sale of our Vocalink shares of $3.1 million. And thirdly, $8.6 million related to the discount unwind linked to our pension liabilities. There is a small $2.5 million charge to net customer redress related to PPI, reflecting FCA clarification on certain redress timescales. We have $38.7 million of PPI provision remaining, which is based on historic run rates and stock and provision stock will last us until December 2019. Recent inquiry volumes have increased, but latest conversion rates are lower than previously experienced, and we will reassess post the time bar on the 29th of August. Finally, the difference in the tax line relates to the PACE sectionalisation last year, and it is worth noting we still have $2.1 billion of unrecognised losses, which at a prevailing tax rate would equate to a deferred tax asset of circa $375 million if we were able to recognise it. Explaining strategic costs on the next page, Fix the Basics phase is nearing completion. Nearly 50% of the $52.7 million relates to the separation from Cooperative Group. As mentioned by both Andrew and Chris, the conclusion of this project is a key area of management focus in H2. Spend on enabling the future has been focused on digitising the bank, which has increased by 26%, and initiating the replatforming of our mortgage and savings systems, which I expect to ramp up following the completion of separation and desktop. I have given you a cash reconciliation on the bottom right, where you can see we have spent $79 million in H1 2019, with a low level of capitalisation equating to 23%. And I now expect full year 2019 cash spend to be between $140 and $150 million, previously guided between $150 and $170 million. Turning to capital, legacy and liquidity on the final three slides. First, capital. Our CET1 ratio has reduced by 0.4%, which is a significantly reduced level of decline when compared to the last two halves of 1.1% and 1.3% respectively. Resources have reduced by $62 million, or 1.2%, which you can see across the first three bars in the top graph, from $1.128 billion to $1.066 billion, offset by a net decrease in risk-weighted assets from $5.054 billion to $4.87 billion, a 0.8% improvement in the ratio. The issuance of Tier 2 debt has improved our overall total capital ratio by 4.2% to 26.1%. The chart at the bottom of the page highlights our minimum CET1 and overall capital requirements. Our CET1 ratio minimum requirement is 12.9%, which includes 3.5% CRD4 buffer. Our CET1 ratio of 21.9% represents a 9% surplus, or 439 million. Our OCR requirement is 20.2%, which is comprised of 8% Pillar 1, 8.69% ICR, and 3.5% CRD4 buffers. Following the issuance of the Tier 2 debt, we have 26.1% of resources against this, representing a 5.9% or £286 million surplus. The OCR requirement can be met with a combination of CET1, AT1 and Tier 2. Given we have not issued AT1, this 3.1% component is met through CET1. You can see the bank's June 29 MREL requirement on the right-hand side chart compared to the indicative Jan 22 end state. This illustration assumes our ICR of 8.69% does not change through time. Based on our current risk-weighted assets, a 1% movement in ICR is worth about 50 million to OCR and 100 million to end state MREL. We are targeting a 200 million MREL issuance in H2. The future MREL profile is dependent on income, cost, risk-weighted assets, and of course ICR development, which is something we're reviewing as we enter our strategic planning round. Taking all this into consideration, I'm pleased to say that we're upgrading our CET1 guidance for 2019 to circa 20.5%, previously circa 19%. Turning to legacy on page 28, which we have now segmented, this is reduced by 18% to 1.4 billion due to no front book activity on these products. Due to the relatively low yields on these portfolios, you can see the income to risk-weighted assets on the right-hand graph is low, being less than 1%, when compared to the core book of 10%. This suggests that the assets are yield impaired as opposed to credit impaired. 21% of the bank's risk-weighted assets are consumed in the legacy business, which against a balance of 1.4 billion shows that the density of capital held in this part of the balance sheet is proportionally high. We are exploring capital accretive options for the legacy segment, including potentially securitising 0.3 billion of the remaining Optimum assets. Beyond Optimum, the book comprises of a low yield, low risk and long dated corporate book, including social housing and PFI, and a shorter dated and higher margin unsecured loan portfolio. Finally, turning to funding and liquidity on page 29, our loan to deposit ratio remains stable at around 95%. Our liquidity coverage ratio similarly at around mid-150s, currently 156.6%. Our primary liquidity is stable at 2.8 billion, represented by cash at the Bank of England of 1.5 billion, gilts of 0.8 billion, and government and other bank bonds of 0.5 billion. Our secondary liquidity of 3.8 billion is reduced in line with natural amortization of securities such as warrant notes. And with that, I'll hand back to Andy.
Thank you, Nick. So if we just turn to what we think the implications of that are on our financial guidance. As Nick ran through the numbers, he picked up on a number of the themes. In terms of customer NIM, given the backdrop and quite uncertain outlook on interest rates, we have decided to guide down 19 and 20 to the sort of circa 170, 160 area, and that really is a function of just looking to be cautious, just given the backdrop in terms of customer NIM. But at the same time, what we've also taken the opportunity is to actually improve our guidance and reduce our cost-income ratios, both for this year and next year, as we look at some of the cost levers that we can pull to counter any compression we may see. So overall, we expect to be able to deliver our underlying profits in line with our original expectations. From a franchise investment perspective, we've also reduced the amount we would be looking to invest in the franchise both in 2019 and 2020, broadly speaking, have reduced the range to 140 to 150 for 2019, as Nick highlighted, and down to 90 to 110 million in 2020. And that really is driven by the visibility that we have, as Chris went through, around the capability that we're putting in place, reducing our reliance on very high-cost third-party providers, trusting our own capability to build that, and then more strategic relationships with fewer suppliers. So again, from an investment point of view. We absolutely do need to continue to invest in fixing the basics and building that platform for our long-term growth, but doing that in a disciplined way. I'm particularly encouraged by the good work that we've been able to do on capital, and effectively have indicated capital guidance up by 1.5% for 2019, and expect through the plan to be able to increase capital guidance by a percent relative to what we saw before. And what you would expect is a continued focus, as me and the management team continue to make the trade-off between what we see in income, what we can drive in terms of cost efficiencies, and how we can make sure we can drive capital efficiencies. And as Nick highlighted, within some of the legacy portfolios, really starting to look at how we can make sure that the future portfolios of the bank and the capital is deployed against where we see franchise growth. In terms of customer assets, around what we do with our core customer assets and customer liabilities, we've detuned those a little bit, and that's really just been a function of effectively making sure that we focus on margin rather than price, and that's just been a function of the evolving market dynamics. As Nick highlighted, our cost of deposits continues to be low. It's a high-quality deposit base, and we'll continue to look to how we optimize the deposit side of the corridor. And on the asset side, as Nick alluded to, finding selective pockets to grow our assets. So with that all told, whilst the NIM guidance is down, overall financials effectively are enhanced, mainly through the meeting bottom line profitability, reduced franchise investment, and stronger capital guidance. So if I just turn to rise before we hand over to questions, in terms of the plan, it's basically the first half year since we shared the plan with you all. We've delivered a strong financial performance in the half. Very heartened to get the brand reactivated and starting to see the 3.5 million customers of the Cooperative Bank getting re-engaged with the brand, and crucially that ethical brand proposition we have starting to resonate with new customers as well. And getting that enhanced digital capability, which is both a route to lower costs, as Chris alluded to, but also providing for the sort of convenience our customers expect today. Our SME business is an exciting area of growth. We have the benefit of the £50 million of funding we got from BCR, and I'd expect us to be able to continue to build on that and build an SME business that can grow substantially in the coming years. From a Tier 2 funding perspective, it's good to have that in place. And in terms of the delivery on some of the fixing the basics activity, we continue to make good progress and are on track. And the mortgage and saving transformation, the simplification of those systems, is underway, which will happen through 19 and into 20. Overall, as I alluded to earlier, the management of the transformation of this bank is going to be the interplay and the trade-offs that we make between income, costs, and the capital levers, ultimately to optimize the resources of the bank and make sure that we can effectively get this bank where it absolutely does provide real differentiation around the services it provides. The other important point to share is that the safe lending book, and whilst given there is a slightly uncertain environment, the fact that we have a very high quality lending book does provide us with some resilience as we look into some of the uncertainty going forward. So, thank you very much for your time. And with that, I'd like to pass back to Emma to see if we have any questions. Emma?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to remove your question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted locally. To confirm, that's star followed by one to ask a question. One moment for the first question, please. At this time, there are no questions in the question queue. To confirm, that's star followed by one to ask a question. As there are no questions, I would like to turn the conference back over to Andrew Bester for any closing remarks.
Yeah, well, so firstly, just like to say a big thank you for the support that we've enjoyed from our investors, and thank you for your interest in the call today. As I say, for us overall, strong first half, delivering in line with expectations. Much more to do in the transformation, but we and the team feel that we're on track and feeling confident about our ability to navigate the challenges and opportunities ahead. Big thank you. Bye-bye.